And we're going to find the initial text. So that's from the Sedra this week. So we are looking at a discourse that the Rebbe said in 1967, probably February. It was this Shabbat, Mishpatim, with the Sedra Mishpatim. And the discourse begins, Im kesev talve, if you lend money, et ami, to my people, et ha'ani imach, to the poor person who is with you. And then it teaches that we mustn't charge interest. So the verse continues, you shouldn't charge interest, you have to give interest-free loans. And of course, this is an important part of Jewish life. And in many Jewish communities, including the one I live in, there are interest-free loan funds so that people are able to borrow money without paying interest. Of course, there's a whole historical dimension to that, what happened in the Middle Ages. But here we're looking at simply this verse. And we're going to be exploring the Rebbe's discussion of it and the ramifications of it based on discourses by the previous Lubavitch Rebbe. So let me see if I can find that discourse. And we will also have the melody, the Maimer melody. So we've, 1 second. Oops. I have something here. Here we are. So the Maimer melody with my somewhat hoarse voice. Oh, ha yiridam ba yam ba yom, ha yiridam ba yam ba yom, ha yiridam ba, ha yiridam ba ho, ha ya ya yiridam ba, ho ya ya yo ya yom. Oh ya 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 yam ba, oh ya 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 bam. Ho ya dam ba dam ba da dam bum, oh ho, oh ho, ya 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 dam bum bum, ya 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 dam bum bum, oh ya 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 bum 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 bum, oh ya ya ba yo, oh ya dam ba yam ba yo, ha ya dam ba ho ya yam ba ho. Oh yeah, 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 da da oh. Right. Lovely greeting, Sam and Chesed and Nicole and Rivka. Hi. And Sarah Berman. Yeah, that's lovely. And Jeremy, lovely seeing you.
Hi, Tali, yeah, thanks.
Very nice. And Eve, yeah. Okay, right. So let's make this a little bit bigger. Here we are. Right, now this is a very beautiful discourse, which in a way it could be defined as being about the direction of spirituality. Is spirituality leaving the world, going to a upper spiritual realm, or is it bringing and creating holiness within the world. And so it begins with this verse, Im kesef talveh et ami et ani imach. It's a verse about lending money to the poor. In other words, being kind, giving, doing acts of kindness. So the act of kindness, the theme of this discourse, is that it's the act of kindness which is the real goal. And that act of kindness, there may be all kinds of other dimensions in Jewish teaching as well, such as the bringing of offerings in the temple, which is a very, very sacred activity. But nonetheless, the goal are the acts of kindness. And it reinterprets these words, Im kesef talveh, if you lend money, et ami. Now, et ami means to my people, meaning to the poor people. But the Midrash says, if you do that, then at imi, you will be with me, God says. If you do acts of kindness, you will be with me, and says God. And that is the real theme of the discourse. So in order to explore this, we're going to go step by step. Umavaya Admu Maharash. Now, Reb Shmuel, who was the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, living in the 1867, was when he said the discourse, which we're going to be discussing, and that was in the first year of his being Rebbe. His father passed away, 1866. That's the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. Then Reb Shmuel became the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe in Lubavitch. And so he explains in a discourse that he said in 1867, 100 years before the Rebbe's discourse that we're now studying, which was said in 1967. The Tzarich Lahavin, we have to understand, what does it mean, et ami, et ani amoch? What does it mean, this double expression? If you should lend money to my people, to the poor person with you. We should have thought it should just say, if you're lending money, lend it to the poor person who is with you. Why does it have this extra phrase, et ami, my people? Which eventually it's going to get reinterpreted at the very end of the discourse to at imi, you are with me.
Sorry, Dr. Levitan. The page doesn't seem to change. I mean, I cannot see the text myself, I don't know about others.
You can't see the text?
I see just Vachara P and that's it, and it doesn't move any further. So if others are okay, that's fine.
One second. What can you see, Rivka? Oh, I see. I understand why. Thank you for pointing that out. It means I forgot to stop sharing and begin sharing with something else. So thank you very much, Rivka. Lo abayshan lamed. You have to be able to interrupt in order to study. Right, now, can you see it now, the discourse?
Yes, we can see.
Beautiful, right.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for pointing that out. Umam Sheikh Ba Maima, now it continues. So now we're on a little paragraph two. We've gone through this brief first paragraph, which presents this text, the verse, if you lend money to my people, to the poor people with you. And it asks the question, why does it say to my people, to the poor people with you? It could have just said, lend money to the poor people with you. Umam Sheikh Ben Maimer, and the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Reb Shmuel, called the Maharash, continues with the discourse. Shela havin zeh, that in order to understand this, Tzarich lahavin maimer rabbeinu zal. We have to understand the teaching of the sages. Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed. the world stands on three things: Al HaTorah, on Torah, Va'al HaAvodah, and on service, which generally means the service in the temple, Va'al Gmilut Chasadim, and on kindness. So there are three basic elements: Torah study, the service in the temple, and kindness, acts of kindness. Now, the Avodah, when it says Avodah, service, hu b'chinat avodat ha-kovanot, that means, the simple meaning of that is, the service of the offerings in the temple, right? So there's the temple in Jerusalem. Every day would be offered an offering in the morning and an offering in the afternoon on behalf of the entire Jewish people. On Sabbaths and festivals and Rosh Chodesh, there would be offered musaf, an additional offering. And as well as that, individuals would bring offerings to the temple, thanksgiving offerings, sin offerings, various kinds of offerings. Now, so it says in this verse that the world stands on three things: Torah, Avodah, which means, and Avodah means the service in the temple. And we then have a problem. Ulahavin said, it's line 11. To understand this, we have to consider, what does the verse mean? Ki chesed chafatzti velo zevach. Now, this is a famous thing where I think it's Isaiah says in the name of God, one second. Just check. Sorry, it's Hosea, not Isaiah, but Hosea. Hosea says, in the name of God, I desire kindness, not sacrifices. Mm. Right? So God says, I want kindness, not sacrifices. The Luchaora Eina Muvan. Now, this raises a question. Shahare Ika Beit HaMikdash, the making of the temple, the existence of the temple is basically in order to bring sacrifices, to bring offerings. As is also explained in the series of discourses called Bati Legani, I've come into my garden, where it explains the idea of Asuli Mikdash. You should make for me, God says in next week's Sedra, you should make for me a sanctuary, v'shachanti b'tocham, and I will dwell in them, which means inside each person. But what is the sanctuary? The Kayala Mishkan, it means the sanctuary, which is also called the temple, and that is the place where they offered offerings. So there are the physical offerings. V'chein hu ba'avodah ruchanit b'nefesh adam. Similarly, the spiritual service in the soul of each individual. Kahadiuk, like when we consider the detail of this phrase, v'shachanti b'tocham, I will dwell in them. B'tocho lo ne'mah, doesn't say, I will dwell in it. Make for me a sanctuary, says God, and I will dwell in it. It doesn't say that. It says, make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell in them. Now, so this in them means betoch kol echad ve'echad, inside each individual, man and woman, God is dwelling. And when we consider what are the offerings in terms of this indwelling of the divine, the korbanot, the offerings are Heim inyan keiruv hakochot v'chushim. Korban comes from a root meaning to draw near. And this means drawing near all our powers and senses to the divine. So there's a spiritual aspect of the offering. So we've got on the one hand the physical aspect of the offering that was offered in the temple, a sheep, let's say a lamb in the morning, a lamb in the afternoon, the daily offering. And the daily prayers of Shacharit and Mincha correspond to those daily offerings. There's also a spiritual aspect of the offering, that it means bringing our qualities and donating them, so to speak, to God. A person has various kinds of talent within them. One might be a good writer, one might be a musician, another one might be a good artist, another one might be a scientist. And what they decide to do is to dedicate these talents to the divine in one way or the other. And part of the creativity of Judaism in the contemporary world is precisely the way we find all kinds of different routes in which to dedicate and devote ourselves to the divine with all our different skills and talents. And that's also called a korban, that's also called an offering. And whichever kind of offering it is, whether we're talking about a physical lamb on the altar and the lamb is slaughtered and its blood is sprinkled on the altar and then the animal is washed and it's clean and it's cut into pieces and it's put on the altar and it's burnt, whether it's that kind of offering or whether it's the kind of offering that a person is a brilliant artist or musician and uses that talent that they have within them in order to relate to intimately, to connect with the divine. Nonetheless, now and whichever kind of devotion it is, just different types of devotion, this devotion, it says in the Zohar, V'raza de kurbana, the secret of the offering, ole ad raza de ein sof, rises to the secret of the infinite. In other words, rises higher and higher and higher, because the infinite has no limit. So if that's the case, and if offerings, korbanot, are so important, whether it's the literal offering, the lamb on the altar, or whether it's the psychological or the personal offering of the talent and the skill that the person has, the imkain, if so, eich omer hakatuv, how can the verse say in Hosea, ki chesed chafatzi velo zevach, I won't count kindness, not sacrifices. So in other words, whether it's the physical lamb or the skill, the great skill that the person has, and that's something really special, they're unique, it's wonderful, they write or paint brilliantly, they are brilliant scientists. But further than that, higher than that, is chesed, kindness. And so here we're looking at the question of what are the chief endeavors in life? And it's especially when this other dimension is added to the whole idea of the korbanot, the offerings, the way in which the offering has a personal meaning in the sense of the person's talent and skill, their own unique individual contribution to the world. And even however precious that is, there's also the dimension of kindness. And what Hosea is saying, more important than the offering is kindness. So let's try to, well, first of all, I think let's stop for a second in order to see if everyone is on board and any questions or comments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agnes, you want to say something?
Well, I'm waiting for this third pillar on which we are resting, on kindness. So far, you emphasized the one in the middle in particular. And I want to ask you the question, why doesn't the script say that we should donate to the rich, to the poor, rather than to lend them without interest? Why don't we give rather than lend?
That's an interesting question. Maimonides, and there are other verses saying that we should donate to the poor. So there are verses which say we should donate, and there are also verses which say we should lend. Now, Maimonides, the Rambam, goes through a list of 8 different levels of charity. And he says the highest level of charity is if you enable a person to make their own living. So we could imagine that there's a poor person, and we have some kind of interesting scheme where we lend him £10,000 and he is able to set himself up in some way. Maybe he'll get an education, he'll have a profession, or maybe he will have a business or something, but he will then be independent. So better than giving charity is creating a means whereby the person himself or herself can support themselves. Now, that's the highest level. Then there are lower levels, and the poor person who needs to be given money for food and clothing and so on, also one should do that as well. But I could understand it in that context.
Well, that is a thank you very much. That's a beautiful explanation.
Thank you.
The one that you quoted from Rambam. Thank you.
Any other
Tali?
Yes.
I was going to say the other reason why you should donate, lend instead of give, is because for the person to be able to pay that person back gives that person a sense of self-esteem and independence and self-worth.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. It is also mentioned
with kindness.
Yeah, hold on.
Go on.
It's also mentioned that lending is something that one can do not only for the poor but also for the rich, because sometimes a rich person is in a situation he needs to borrow money, and you lend to the rich person, and so you're helping him out in that way.
I wanted to ask with kindness, chesed, and are there different levels of kindness, like are there different levels of charity?
Well, I mean, charity is kindness, and describing different levels of charity is like saying there are different levels of kindness. Of course, there are other forms of kindness as well. So there are many forms of kindness.
Thank you.
Right. Now, right, so we've got this question. How can it say that God prefers kindness to offerings in the temple? Umavaya Ba'amaimad explains in the discourse, that means the discourse which was said 100 years earlier in 1867 by Reb Shmuel, Sheman shekatuv chesed chafatzi v'lo zevach, when it says, I prefer kindness and not offerings, that means, what is it, the main thing that God wants? Ki chafetz chesed, when it says he wants kindness, hu bechinat pnimiut haratzon, that is the inner aspect of the desire of God. V'hainu she'ika mechuvan, that means the main desire, hu kedei she'yeh bechinat hamshacha milemayle lemata, inyan ha'chesed. The main desire from God is that there should be a flow from God, from above to below, which is the divine kindness flowing into the world. Avu mikol makom, but nonetheless, tzarich liot gam kein bechinat zevach. There also has to be the offering. So there's the offering, and the discourse seems to see this as being tied together by the fact of bringing the offering, which, so to speak, rises from below to above, we elicit the blessing from God, which comes from above to below. And that blessing is the kindness on the part of God. There's also the kindness on the part of human beings. So here we have the idea of the inner aspect of the will and the outer aspect of the will. For example, כשאדם רוצה לנסוע לאיזה מקום, a person wants to travel to a certain place, and he or she has got a purpose why they're going. לקנות סחורה. Let's say they're a businessman, they want to go to this place in order to get a certain kind of goods that you can't get anywhere else. שיש לו רצון בנסיעה זו. He wants to travel there. אבל לא זה עיקר מכוון. That's not the real purpose of what he's doing. כי עיקר מכוון, the main purpose, הוא הרווח, it's the business that he's going to be conducting. When he gets to this place, he's going to get a certain kind of goods. Then he's going to bring it back here, and then he's going to sell it here. And he'll make some kind of profit on the whole thing. So that's what he wants. שיהיה מזה כדי להחיות נפשו, so that he and his family will be able to live. ואם לא היה רבע, if there wasn't this possibility of doing business, of buying something in that distant place and selling it here, לא at a profit, לא היה רוצה לסע כלל, he wouldn't travel to that place. He doesn't want to go to that place just as a tourist. He's going there because he's got a certain purpose. אך מחמת הרבע, because of the purpose in this business deal that he's able to carry out, ממילא יש לו רצון בנסיעה זו גם כן. So therefore he wants the journey. Because without the journey, he won't be able to carry out that business deal. So now the Rebbe applies this simple to understand pattern of what is the outer will and what is the inner will. The outer will is he wants to go on the journey, so he goes to the train station, he gets on the train, so he's traveling. But the inner will is the whole purpose of why he's traveling. Obviously, you can put different things in the metaphor. You know, he's going to a certain place because there's a library there, and he wants to read a certain book because he wants to learn about something. And so you can put whatever possibilities in the mixture. But the main thing is that we do action A because we want action or result B. And action A is only the external part, and action or result B is the real purpose. Now that is what he then applies to this verse about the offering. Line 13. V'zel gam ke masha katov. Now that's also what this verse says. Chesed chafatzi v'lo zevach. God says, I want kindness and not the offerings. Dahainu she'ike pnimi utzono. That means the real inner will of God, who bechinat chesed, is the kindness. Whether it's the kindness pouring from God to us, and whether it's our kindness pouring to other people, that is the real will of God. But in order to get that, ach mikol makom, nonetheless, yesh lo ratzon gam kem bechinat zevach. God also desires the offerings, rak shehu bechinat chitzoniyut haratzon. The thing is that bringing the offering is the external aspect of the will. Shelo zehu ha'ikar. That's not the main thing. Ki ikar ha'mechuvan, the real purpose, hu bechinat hamshacha milamayla lamata. It's the flow from above to below. Ki nitava hakadosh baruch hu, because God desired liot lo dira betachtonim dafka, that he should have a dwelling in the lower world. And therefore, by bringing the offering, we trigger off a flow, the offering, so to speak, rises to the divine, and then from the divine rises, there flows a response. And that response from the divine is the real mechuvan, that is the real intention. And the offering might not be a lamb on the altar, it might be a person dedicating their skill as an artist, a musician, a scientist, a writer, whatever it might be. And by this dedication of themselves to a higher spiritual purpose, there is a flow of blessing from the divine, which is the real purpose which God wants. So let's just make sure that we understand this step. So there's the idea that there's the offering, and the offering rises to a higher level, draws down a response from God, and that response is called kindness from God to us. And there's also kindness from us to other people. And what the verse in Hosea is saying, God says, what I really want is the kindness. Don't make the mistake of thinking that the offering is the main thing. It's the kindness which results from the offering. That is the main thing. And very often, at various times in our history, people have been mistaken about what is the real purpose of Judaism and of our lives. And is it the, and sometimes people can fix on certain rituals, which are very, very important, but miss the further meaning of the relationship with other people and bringing kindness into the world, which is the real purpose of existence. Okay, are there any comments on that?
Can I say something?
Yes.
I'm really glad that you said that, because I think that's true, that people talk much more about the rituals than they do about kindness. But I'm wondering whether there's not, if to use your analogy of the journey, whether the zevach isn't a form of giving, however inadequate, so that it's sort of analogical to chesed, insofar as chesed is a form of giving. And the other thing is, sorry?
No, go on, yeah.
Well, the other thing is that I remember somewhere, some sort of drush, where or mashal, where it said that chesed was really the heart of every Jew. So there's no people like the Jews for chesed. So that giving chesed is really awakening the inmost, you know, neshama of the Jew.
That's a very beautiful idea. Certainly it says that the Jewish people are rachmanim b'nei rachmanim, merciful.
There you are, there you are.
Children of merciful people. And what distinguishes the Jew here is that the animal soul of the Jew, which might be selfish and so on, also has within it a merciful, kind quality. And so that idea of kindness is sort of being built in. So it might sound very chauvinist, but that's the way in which Hasidic teachings particularly analyze the nature of the Jew. It's an interesting thing that many Jews give up all kinds of aspects of Judaism except the giving of charity. They still give a lot of charity. It's like the last to go.
May I add something? Maybe when artists say they have inspiration, it's come from heaven, from Hashem. Maybe this is the chesed of Hashem towards the people through the artists. And that's I think the chesed.
Okay, yeah.
And they enjoy it, didn't they? Other people enjoy the results of the art, the artist. Okay.
Well, that's also an interesting thing. You know, this lust to communicate and to transmit and to create and to teach and to be an artist or musician or writer. That's certainly part of it, or a scientist. So, now, for the first point that you said, Eve, the discourse is now going to explain that in the offering itself, there is both a movement upward and a movement downwards. So that's what I think we're going to be seeing now. Hi, Shana, it's lovely seeing you.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Hi, yeah, a pleasure. Right, Now, so here we have section Gimel, section 3 of the discourse. Ula ha'ir, and just to make the point, she'ena kavana she'inyan ha'zevach, this doesn't mean that the sacrifice it's just a going up from below to above. And not a flow also from above to below. And that's what he's going to explain now. What Eve, you said, was that the actual bringing of the sacrifice by the person, the bringing of the offering, is itself a kind of chesed in itself. I think that's what you meant. And that's, you know, that's a very interesting idea. Here, he's looking at it slightly differently. The bringing of the offering, yes, that rises up, but there's an aspect of the offering that it signifies a flow from above to below. Now, Shahara Yadua, now it's known. And so this being known, it's just so he quotes various Hasidic discourses. She'al yedei hakorbanot, that through the offerings, na'ase lo rak inyan ha'aliyah, it's not only the ascending, like the Zohar says, rising up to the secret of the infinite, but also ele gam inyan hamshacha lemata, but also a flow from above downwards. The Yesh Lohosif, among Kanad, She'inyan Zemel Humaz, that this is hinted also in the saying of the sages, Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omed, the world stands on three things, on the Torah, on the service in the temple, and on kindness. Haynu Shigam Kava Voda, which means also the line of service, that pillar, as it were, and which normally we think of as a rising up from below to above, it's called a pillar. She'alav ha'olam omed, on which the world stands. The world is supported by this pillar of service. And that is like a metaphor, like you would imagine, a house. A house she'omed al shlosha amudim. Imagine a house on stilts, like they have in some parts of the world. And the house is standing on three pillars. V'kevan shezeh mashal shel Torah, since it's a Torah metaphor, shemeduyak b'chol apchatim, we can take seriously all the details of the metaphor. Now, so that means that this pillar, which is the pillar of service, who lochak is not only a movement from below to above, which means a preparation a preparation for the flow coming from above to below, that it should be through those other pillars, as it were, those other channels of Torah and kindness. Now, Torah, let's just pause here for a second. Torah is a teaching from God to the world. So when we study Torah, we are enjoying divine kindness. It's these are the kindness of God that he shares these deep spiritual dimensions which are expressed in the Torah. Whatever part of Torah it is, it carries this beautiful spirituality of the divine, and we are able to study it and discuss it and understand it and argue about it and translate it from one language to the other. Make poems out of it. It's an amazing thing, this flow of Torah flowing to us. So that is one kind of kindness from God, which can then be shared with others. And the other kind of kindness is keeping us alive and giving us sustenance and making crops grow in the fields and the air that we can breathe. So all these are two lines of divine kindness coming to us. And so then in the middle, so to speak, we have the offering which rises up. So the point is that the only thing that the offering does? Ela, page line 10, at the end of the line. Ela yesh bo gam inyan hamshacha lemata. The offerings also have a flow downwards. Shelachein nikcha b'shem amud. Now, in this image of a house on three pillars, and we're saying that one of the pillars are the offerings in the temple. So if the world is standing on a pillar, then the house is standing on three pillars. So that pillar is something which is here in this world. So it's not just the offering, isn't just something which enables us to fly away in a very spiritual way. It's something which helps us be here in the world and be anchored in the world and to stand securely on the pillar. So that's the thing about the offerings. The main part of the offering, the main aspect of the offering is rising from below to above. As and then it quotes in the discourse. So there is the idea of saying the Shema in the morning. And generally, if people go to the synagogue, they go to the synagogue, men put on tefillin, and then they say the Shema at the right time. Now, very often, they don't manage to get to the synagogue early enough. There's a time when you have to complete the Shema. Like today, it's something like 9:42 in London. So according to Rabbi Shneur Zalman, there's also an earlier time that many people keep, about half an hour earlier. So there's this idea of saying the Shema before now, today, something like 9:42. So because they may not get to the synagogue in time, the synagogue service might start later or something like that. So they say the Shema at home before they go to the synagogue, which is the right thing to do. Now, should they put on tefillin when they say this Shema at home? Should they have a pair of tefillin at home for them to say the Shema? So there are some people who feel that they should, and what supports them is a saying in the Talmud. Anyone who says the Shema without tefillin, it's as if he brought a sacrifice without the flour offering or another kind of sacrifice, without the wine offering and the oil, the olive oil offering. Because the saying of the Shema is rising up, and tefillin is a flow coming down. So there's the Shema going up and tefillin drawing the radiance down. That's a very interesting way of understanding and thinking about tefillin. When a man puts on tefillin, there's a radiance which is flowing down into him and into the world. So that's also the difference between the sacrifices, the lamb which is put on the altar and is burnt, which, so to speak, rises upwards, and the flour offering, the wine offering, the olive oil offering, which they are, as it were, bringing something down. So that's happening at the same moment. You have some aspect which goes up and another aspect which comes down. So therefore, even though the offerings themselves have this quality of movement from above to below, as just described, nonetheless, the main nature of the offerings is the rising up rather than the libations which are flowing downwards. Since the main aspect of the offerings is rising up, so we can understand that the flow that comes from the offerings is not like the flow which comes about through Torah and kindness. So when we study Torah, we are drawing a flow into the world. And when we do kindness, we are expressing and drawing a flow down into the world. And so therefore God says, Chesed Chafatzi, I desire kindness more than the sacrifices, because the main idea of this flow down is particularly through kindness. Even though the sacrifice is important, and especially if we're talking about a person devoting their talents in a positive way, that's also important, having a life, beruf, a metier, having a vocation, where they're an artist, they're a musician, they're a writer. So all of these are very wonderful things, but there is also kindness, and simple kindness to others is a very profound concept, which we're going to explore a little bit more now. But before we launch into that in section Dalet, let's just stop and see if everyone is okay with what we've, where we are at the moment. Okay. All right. So that's. Right. So section four. So the discourse continues, explaining the significance of kindness. Now, about this kindness, we have another very interesting verse that God says, Ki amati olam chesed ibaneh. God says, I said the world is built through kindness. And there are two explanations of what this verse means. The first one is that the main aspect of the creation of the world was because of God's desire for kindness. Because thus it arose in the divine will, because it is the nature of good to do good. In other words, God created the world in order that he should be able to express his goodness. It's one of the ways of understanding what was the purpose for the creation of the world. And so one of the ways of understanding it, it's in order for God to express his goodness. And so he creates the world with us in the world. And then God is able to be good to us and thus express his goodness. Obviously, this raises all kinds of questions. You know, what happens when things are not going well? But let's leave that for the moment and just understand this within the, you know, within the limits of the discourse at this moment, that one aspect of kindness in terms of the existence of the world is God's desire to do kindness. Vahabait, and the second way of understanding kindness in relation to the existence of the world, ki olam hu lashon zman. The word olam in Hebrew means world, but it also has a different meaning, which means time. Lo'olam, for example, means forever. So the word olam, on the one hand, it means world, like the physical world, and it could mean the universe, or it could mean the planet Earth. But also, it can mean time. And v'hainu shel olam tzarich lamshich b'chinat chesed. So we are, in a sense, reinterpreting this verse as to mean that olam chesed yibaneh, you always need a flow of kindness. So the word olam here comes to mean always. It's a word about time, like you could say lo olam, forever. So forever, kindness is needed. Now, what does that mean? V'zeh chesed yibaneh. Through kindness, the world is built. Shetzarich livnot b'chinat ha-chesed. We have to build up the attribute of kindness. Shetumshach b'olam, so it'll be drawn into the world. Sheachshav, because now, b'itaruta dilatata talya milta. Everything depends on our arousal from below. Ki b'tfilat ha-briya, at the beginning of creation, there was a flow of kindness coming into the world from God without the world doing anything to deserve it. And that's the initial input that God gave of kindness, so to speak, getting the world going. But now, now the whole thing depends on what do we human beings do. And that's why it says, I said the world will be made out of kindness. We always have to draw down this quality of kindness. And similar to the way in which there's always a divine energy in the universe making it continue to exist, so there has to be a continuous flow of kindness from us. So that's a very interesting thing. On the one hand, it's the divine kindness, and on the other hand, it's the human kindness. In order for the world to exist, there has to be a kindness from God making the world exist at the beginning, and B, kindness from us to each other and to whoever needs our kindness or will benefit by our kindness, because it's only through our kindness that the world continues to exist in a beautiful way. I'd like to stop here for a second. I think it's a fascinating idea. The need for our kindness in order for the world to continue in a positive way. So here, man and woman together are made, as it were, parties to creation, together with God. And the way in which they help everything move on is by being kind. A very striking concept. It's our human kindness, which has an important, it's an important ingredient in the whole chemistry of the universe. And our kindness is something crucial. Would anyone like to comment on that?
And I suppose this kindness could be interpreted as growth as well, would you say?
That makes sense. Yes, Gloria.
Growth.
Kindness is a sense of growing. Yes, that does make sense.
Also, you may say, the kindness from Hashem is also going on and on all the time. It's not just in the beginning, but it's forever.
Right.
Get
right.
Breath and all, you know.
Right. So there's a web of kindness, which we are somehow involved in. There's kindness from God, kindness from us, and worldwide kindness. That's a very significant concept. Okay, let's go back. Now, the thing is that if you say that one explanation of this verse, the world is built by kindness, one explanation is the divine kindness before the world came into being properly, before the giving of the Torah, the divine kindness just keeping everything going. And then there's this human kindness that we've just described, which is a very intense thing of people being very dedicated and helping each other in the right way. So Umavaya Bar Maimed explains in that discourse that these two aspects, these two kinds of kindness, the way they are in the individual service of the divine. There's an arousal from above, a divine arousal, which comes as a result of the arousal from below. We are aroused below. We decide, you know what, I'm so excited. I want to do something special. I'm going to pray a little bit more. I'm going to learn Torah a little bit more. I'm going to give more charity. I'm going to do something more. As a result, we bring onto us a kind of divine response. So there's one kind of divine response that depends on our human behavior. This is the second explanation, that it's the activities of the us, people living in the lower world, that arouses the flow of kindness from God. Now, there's also another level of arousal from God. There's another kind of flow from God, mitzad atzma, that comes just by itself. Which is it is higher than the upper response that comes from the efforts of people making an effort here in the lower world. Because by the fact that we make an effort here in the lower world, we have a certain effect on the divine, and so therefore certain positive things happen. But there's also a level which goes completely beyond that. So zehu kaperish harishon. That's like the first explanation. She'ikar b'riyat ha'olam, that the main thing about the creation of the world, haita mitzad ki chafetz chesed, who comes because of God's desire for kindness. In other words, free, without anyone having done anything to earn that kindness. Especially about what was spoken about earlier. Sha'inyan dechich, I think before this discourse, Sha'inyan dechich hafetz chesed, when we say that God desires kindness, hu bevchinat yachid shalamayla mebchinat echad, we're talking about a very exalted aspect of the divine. The way that we normally think of the divine is one. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. So in the Shema prayer, there is this idea of the oneness of God. But there's another term for oneness, and another extreme, if you like, of oneness, which is the word yachid. Echad means one, and yachid means only one, unique. And that's higher than the number one. And it's certainly higher than the term kadmon. Now, kadmon means original, like God is kadmon l'chol davar, it says in Yigdal. God comes before everything. So higher than that kadmon, that idea of being original, there is the idea of God being yachid, the only one. Baal zeh amru, and that's why the sages said, ad shelo nivra olam, before the world was created, that means before the world of Atzilut was created, and all the other things, all the other different dimensions of existence, the spiritual dimensions. So higher and higher and higher. I'll just translate this. That means higher than all the worlds, the Atzilut, emanation, creation, formation, action, higher than all those worlds. Dimension of the divine. And what is that dimension? Hayahu Ushmo Bilvan. God and his name were alone. And so there's this idea of this divine loneliness, as it were, uniqueness and solitary quality. That is a very, very powerful thing. And so Shahapedish Bazaar, line 12, what this means is not only that there isn't, you can't feel any other kind of thing that's just him and his name. But when we speak about God's name and him using the third person for God, they're in a way of alone, just alone, not disturbed by anything else. And this is a very exalted level. Higher than him and his name in themselves, there's him and his name alone. And from this we can understand that this is something very exalted, which can't be drawn down, not by an arousal from below, which does have a certain effect above, but here we're talking about something beyond that effect. Omnam, however, when we're talking about the idea that God desires kindness, it arose in God's will. That the arousal from below, tifal, will have an effect. To draw down an exalted upper level of arousal, mimakom gavoa, from a very high level. Shemitzad atzmo, that in itself, hu lemaila mikadei sheyuchal liyot bo itarut leletata shel hanivraim, from a level so high that the arousal, however pure it is, coming from the created things here below, will not reach that level. So in other words, what it's describing here, let's stop sharing for a minute. So what it's describing here is the way that there is an aspect of the divine relationship to the world which is completely beyond our reach. And nonetheless, by the fact that we do good things, we do acts of kindness, and we link together, in all kinds of different ways, we make a situation where that flow might take place. So we can't directly reach it. And in fact, the divine plants, God plants into existence some kind of interrelationship that our kindness provokes the connection with the divine. So it's really something very exalted. And even if the flow from God coming from above to below is completely beyond the world, that means cannot be triggered by anything that we do in the world, nonetheless, God is able to make some kind of connection, even though it's beyond our reasoning, how, so that there are the kindness that we do does link with the kindness that comes from the Holy One. Blessed be He. Okay, now this might be have been a little bit confusing. Do we understand clearly, or at least a little bit, what is being said here? Yeah, is everyone okay with this? Yeah, okay. Now we're going to look a little bit further. Now, in order, here we have line 9 on page Yud, page 10. In order to achieve this flow of kindness through the service of us human beings here in the world, we have to have a kind of service which is a bit like what we're trying to trigger, not trigger off. And that means the idea that we give charity, give kindness to a poor person who has nothing of his own, we are doing something significant which has a kind of mirror effect above. As it adds in the discourse, one can say that through the fact that the person does kindness more than his strength, more than his or her ability, they draw down from above an arousal from above which is higher than the level that the arousal from below would reach. So if we talk about where the arousal from below can reach and the effect it has, that's like the strength of a person. But then we're talking, and then it tells us about a love which is completely higher, completely beyond that strength. And nonetheless, we try to be kind on that level as well. And that can be compared, it's line 17, as explained in a number of places discussing Chabad Hasidic teaching, the love which is beyond all limits. Now, in love, there are also different levels, right? We've seen from Maimonides there are different levels of charity. And in general, there are different levels of positive behavior, of kindness. And then we have the idea that in love of the divine, there are different levels. So it says in the Shema, you should love the Lord your God, b'chol levavecha, with all your heart, u'b'chol nafshecha, and with all your soul, or your life, u'b'chol moedecha, and with all your might. And one can find explanations of this, that with all your might, it's going to a supremely higher level. And so it's this level of all your might. This is what draws down this very high level from above. There's a very exalted level of response from above. And even though the love that the person has for the divine is only on that level of b'chol modecha, with all your might, and it's ma'od shalcha, your quality of what is the most that you can achieve. And for each one of us, it's ma'od shalcha, it's our special quality, which we can achieve, which we can give over to God. Shehi b'hagbala, and our special quality is limited. We're limited human beings. How much can we love? How much can we do? How much can we dedicate ourselves? There's always some kind of limitation. And so nonetheless, So we can have a situation that for that individual, that is the infinite, that is limitless as regards that individual. For another person, it's not limitless, it's finite. But for that person, but for one person, this is a limitless situation. And so that limitless situation has tremendous power. Similarly with kindness, with tzedaka, giving charity and giving kindness, when a person goes beyond his comfort zone, as they say in English, he goes beyond his comfort zone in being kind, in giving charity, he draws down from above also a quality that in itself is beyond any reach of the arousal from below. He draws down from above a very exalted level. Now, so now comes a further discussion. The Rebbe says here, if the whole thing is something which is really higher than the offerings and the korbanot, and we find that when they were in the land of Israel with the temple, there was something which was higher, and this is so very great. How is it, therefore, that the central way in which people think about the temple service and the service of the sanctuary when they were in the desert, they think about it in terms of the offerings, not in terms of the kindness which is somehow generated by the offering? So there's a complicated rationale over here, that since the offerings cause the kindness, because the offering is flows to God, so to speak, and sets off a trigger of kindness, a flow of kindness, the thing that is causing that thing, if A causes B, there's some kind of special quality that A has in relation to B. And so therefore, the fact of the offerings, because they result in kindness, in other words, divine kindness flowing from above to below, that gives the offerings themselves a special connection with this whole idea of kindness. I think that's a reasonable way of assessing this connection. And then it explores the three festivals. Well, this is a further section of this discourse. He talks about the three festivals and the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Abraham relates to Pesach, because there's a tradition that when the angels came to visit him and Sarah, it was Pesach, and in some sense they were keeping Pesach. How did they keep Pesach before the Jews were in Egypt and the Jews went out of Egypt? And when we went out of Egypt, we celebrate Pesach. Okay, so that's another discussion. But there is this idea that Abraham was keeping Pesach. And then we have the idea of Sukkot, because Jacob made Sukkot. He made booths in which to keep his cattle. So Jacob represents Sukkot. And then there's Isaac, who's offered on the altar, and there's a ram offered instead. That ram represents the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. So the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, and also the shofar of the time of the giving of the Torah, because at the time of the giving of the Torah, but there was also a shofar blown. So Yitzhak, Isaac, he is on the level of severity, of rising upward. As it says, there's a saying of the sages, that the ashes of Isaac are there on this sort of heavenly altar all the time. And that's the offering. Now, Chag HaShavuot, the festival of Shavuot, which commemorates the getting of the Torah, that represents a flow from above to below. And that's the opposite of the flow from below to above. And so, since we've got this idea that there's a flow coming down, which is set off by a flow going up, so we have also, in whatever movement it is, whatever kind of movement, we've got the idea, the goal, that there should be a revelation below. Are we all together on this so far? It's some sort of like complicated dimension, but what it's basically saying is that we can understand this pattern within all Jewish life, that everything, it's either a movement upwards or it's a response downwards and a flow downwards. And we can experience our prayers, Shabbat, everything in terms of a mingling of these two concepts of a dedication to the divine and a step upwards to the divine with some kind of corresponding effect. And that corresponding effect then can fuel various aspects of our daily lives as Jews. So we're all the time in this sort of web of kindness, where it's either a move from us towards the divine or a flow from the divine to us. And included in that is also the kindness that we do to other human beings. So we're in this fascinating continuum of kindness, right? It's a continuum of kindness, kindness from the divine, kindness from us, kindness from others that we recognize, that we show gratitude to. So it's that world of kindness. Now, in the personal spiritual service of the individual, it explains in various Hasidic discourses that there's the idea of a person reaching upwards to the divine, and the idea, the important connected idea, they have to be able to come back as well. So there's reaching up and coming back. And in Hebrew, that's called ratzo v'shoyv, going up, reaching up, and also coming back. And that coming back is a very important thing. Now, it says in a Hasidic book by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, the book's called Torat Chaim, it gives there a very interesting thing about the Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Israel Baal Shem Tov was the founder of Hasidism, and he was absolutely a very remarkable person. One of his great special spiritual qualities is that he was able to have an ascent of the soul. His soul could leave him, so to speak, and ascend to higher worlds, and he was able to see all kinds of things. So in Torat Chaim, it makes the comment that the Baal Shem Tov prayed earnestly and in fact fasted several times, because what he wanted was that even at the time that his soul is experiencing this tremendous journey, this journey upwards into spiritual worlds, that he should still be able to have a presence down here below. And if someone asks a question, he should be able to answer them. So he wanted both things at once, right? Now, this actually, standing back for a moment, that is very typical of the Jewish mystical tradition, somehow, or even the halachic tradition, is that we get our cake and we eat it as well. So let's say, a fascinating thing that there can be opposites in different ways, the person is able to transcend everything, and there's the going up and the coming down. And what the Baal Shem Tov wanted, that even when he was in a very exalted spiritual state of rising up, he should also be able to give a coherent and meaningful answer to the person in this world who's asking him a question. So that is, now that's reported in Torat Chaim, which is by the Mittler Rebbe, by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. We could say, possibly, although I didn't read this, it's just my suggestion, that we could say that about the Mittler Rebbe himself, because he would have very deep transports of the spirit, and the idea that he wanted to be able to be here in this world at the same time that he's in that transport of the spirit. So now we can come back to this verse that if you lend money to my people, lending money to the ordinary, to the poor person among you, Now, and we made the point that these words in the middle, my people, seem to be redundant. Now it says in the Midrash that you can take the word et ami, my people. God said, if you lend money without interest, etc., you may lend money in the right way, then at imi. Now, if you look here, it says et, but it should be at. I checked it in the Midrash itself. At imi, you are with me. So if you express this kindness, you, says God, you are with me. And with me is like it says in another verse, ki imcha mekochem, with you is the source of life. And that means the source of life, which gives life to everything, is with you and it's secondary to you. And nonetheless, we are able to squeeze in there as well. And as it says, before God created the universe, there was him and his name alone. And that was something very special. It was the radiance, which was still intermingled with the luminary. And by giving us, lending money to people or doing acts of goodness and kindness to people, through that, through this kindness and staka, we draw down the source of life, which is with me, with God. And that's the note on which the discourse ends in a very beautiful way, that by us giving to others, we, and enabling them to give to each other, we are in some deep sense with the divine. Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna stop recording.